It's Thursday, April 11th. Well, this is deflating. We start here. In a worrisome sign to economists, prices creep upward.
It's taking a while for inflation to come down.
It means you're paying more. Could it also mean a plan from the Fed is getting derailed? Could Donald Trump's personal beef now undo a key national security policy?
He says jump. Sometimes in Congress, these lawmakers say, how high?
A fight over surveillance has upended congressional alliances. And another whistleblower says Boeing is falling down on the job.
To me, human life is precious. It's worth the trouble.
We'll break down the alarming claims from a current employee. From ABC News, this is Start Here. I'm Brad Milkey. For months, one of the biggest issues beleaguering this country, inflation, has been getting back under control.
We have dramatically reduced inflation from 9% down to close to 3%.
The Federal Reserve took decisive actions to make loans and home mortgages essentially more expensive, saying in the long run, our economy would be healthier for it. Those inflation numbers have indeed been on their way down. But yesterday, we got a new report from the federal government showing inflation not only rose last month, but rose even more than expected. Let's bring in ABC's Elizabeth Schulze, who covers the economy. Elizabeth, what should we know about this report? Because people were freaking out.
People were freaking out, Brad, because this report showed that inflation is still stubbornly high and it's going up faster than many had expected. When you look at these monthly numbers of inflation, prices were up 0.4% in March from the month before. That was the third month in a row that it had been reaccelerating. And we'd really been in this time before that and for months on end where inflation had been decelerating. In other words, like prices weren't going down ever, but they weren't going up as fast. And that was what obviously households want to see when they're looking at their budgets. It's what the Federal Reserve had wanted to see. But here we are. This new report comes out. It shows that prices are still, as economists would say, sticky. It's taking a while for inflation to come down. And there are a couple of big culprits in this report. One of them is gas prices. What did it cost you just now to fill up here?
$56.89.
We see that gas prices have been ticking up.
I used to fill it up for $35. It was a beautiful thing.
And when you talk to people, they notice these higher prices when they're going to fill up at the gas station.
If you want to go a long distance, you have to consider and calculate how much you're going to spend gas. And you're not going to drive like before.
You have to think twice about those trips.
Yes, I have to think twice and like three times, four times before you drive.
Higher gas prices ripple throughout the economy. They affect transportation costs for companies. That can sometimes lead companies to increase prices. So that's a problem when you're driving. It's a problem for businesses. And then the other big culprit in this report is rent. Rent is still going up at a faster pace than it historically would.
I might have to take a little bit of a loss at the beginning of the month so I can make rent.
I talked to a small business owner in Chicago. Her name is Alexandria Jones. She just saw her rent go up $400 from $1,400 a month to $1,800. And that is a huge expense when you're looking at your budget.
And I try to go to the grocery store and I'm like, I might just go and grab something quick to eat because like I can't, you know, grocery prices are going up. Gas is going up.
This is the reality of what this inflation report showed is that those day-to-day costs, rent, gas, also car insurance up 22% in the past year.
Wow.
A lot of these services that folks pay for every day, every month are continuing to be higher than they historically would. And that's a problem.
But every month we do see certain sectors, like you just rattled off a few areas where we're seeing particularly high inflation. Across the board, 3.4, 3.5%. I mean, how bad is that really? Like, I've always heard, like, over four, it starts getting scary. Like, how bad is that in historical terms?
It's a good point. It's really good context because 2 years ago, we were talking about nearly 9% inflation. So we have undoubtedly made progress that prices are not going up at that historically fast pace. 3.5% is a lot better than three times that. The problem is that the Federal Reserve is really targeting a 2% inflation rate.
We're strongly committed to bringing inflation down to 2% over time. That is our goal, and we will achieve that goal.
It says 2% is the level that prices should be going up. That's basically a healthy economy. And people should know that in a healthy economy, prices do go up. And that's because businesses and consumers are outspending money. Generally, when there's spending happening in the economy, that means that prices will continue to go up at a gradual pace. But right now, we're not quite at that healthy pace. We are above it. And that is making the Federal Reserve, Brad, rethink its plan for how it wants to try to bring down inflation and what it's going to do in the coming months as it thinks about its policy.
I see. So it's not just the inflation itself, you're saying, that is so worrisome. It's that the Fed has had to make all these painful decisions that have affected Americans. And because of this, what? Those decisions will stay in effect longer, essentially.
Exactly, because the Fed has taken on this inflation fight head on. It raised interest rates to this 22-year high over the past couple of years with the goal that that will bring inflation down. And that's been working. And there was a time where it looked like this fight was pretty much over. But now, because we're in this time where inflation is sticking around, the Fed is saying, maybe we're not quite done with that fight yet. And what that means is that the Fed isn't ready to lower interest rates.
Inflation is still too high. Ongoing progress in bringing it down is not assured. And the path forward is uncertain.
The expectation had been that that first rate cut, the first rate cut in 4 years, would happen in June of this year. And that would mean lower borrowing costs for people. If you're taking out a new mortgage, if you're trying to get a new car, it would ripple into lower costs for your if you're paying off credit card debt. But the Fed sees this report, and the overall expectation is that it's not going to be ready to cut interest rates in June. It might have to wait until later in the year. In September, might have to wait even longer that, depending on how this inflation picture shakes out.
Yeah, where does that put the White House? Like, the Biden White House has insisted that they've taken action to get inflation under control. And yet at the end of the day, isn't it just like the Fed is more responsible for any of this? Can the White House even do anything about the Fed, or do they just kind of look at them from across Washington and go, please, guys, help us?
Well, and that's a really important question, right? Because obviously President Biden wants to see lower interest rates. People would be happier if those borrowing costs were lower and if inflation was lower. But there's this independence of the Fed. The Fed says that it operates completely separate of any political influence. But even so, it does start to get a little bit tricky as we get closer into the fall. If that first rate cut happens in September, guess what's 2 months later? An election. And the closer we get to that election date, the more it might look like the Fed is being potentially influenced by politics. If you talk to policymakers at the Federal Reserve, they are ready to go. They've been wanting to cut interest rates. They want to get that first rate cut done to kind of make that appearance of politics not be there. But if the data isn't letting them, if the inflation data is not letting them cut interest rates yet, they're in a really tough spot.
Well, I do stand by my prediction that before the year is out, there'll be a rate cut. This may delay it a month or so. I'm not sure of that. We don't know what the Fed is going to do for certain.
President Biden is saying he still thinks that rate cut is going to come this year. He's not saying he's directly influencing the Fed.
Right.
But it starts to get a lot murkier as we head closer toward election day, Brad.
Right. The president trying to assure Americans that, like, don't worry, like, rates will get cut, even though technically he has no control over that. And we'll see how much influence he actually wields here as we get closer to an election. All right. Elizabeth Schulze in Washington. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Brad.
Next up on Start Here, I spy a political high wire act. We're back in a bit. This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. Have you ever wondered what you would do with an extra hour in your day? I think about this all the time. I'm like, I would be so productive. I'd exercise more, or I'd read a book, or I'd take a nap, like restore myself. We often find ourselves yearning for these extra hours, but the real question is, what would you do if you were making yourself a priority? Well, how about therapy? It can help you discover what's important so you can make the most of your time. If you've ever benefited from therapy, you know how transformative it can be. It's not just for those who have experienced major trauma. Therapy empowers you to learn positive coping skills, set boundaries, and become the best version of yourself. If you're considering starting therapy, you should give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online. It's designed to be convenient, flexible, and tailored to your schedule. You just fill out a brief questionnaire. You'll be matched with a licensed therapist. And here's the beauty of it. You can switch therapists if you're not finding the right fit. No additional charge. Take the first step. Learn to make time for what makes you happy with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/start here today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/start here. With daylight saving time upon us, we're looking forward to more daylight and longer days from March through November. And while setting our clocks forward gives us the illusion of more time, doesn't necessarily help businesses find qualified candidates any sooner. Fear not, there is a solution. ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter is your 24/7 hiring partner working tirelessly to connect you with the right candidate. Once you post your job on ZipRecruiter, it gets distributed to over 100 job sites, ensuring you reach a diverse pool of qualified individuals. Their smart technology scans thousands of resumes, matching you with people whose skills perfectly align with your job requirements. Spring forward with a new hiring partner, ZipRecruiter, and find top talent sooner. See why 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. Just go to this exclusive web address to try ZipRecruiter for free, ZipRecruiter.com/start here. Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/start here. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. House Speaker Mike Johnson has a problem.
We are not going to be able to do big transformational changes that we'd like.
On one hand, he needs the support of former President Donald Trump. Republicans currently have one of the narrowest majorities in the history of the House. Any disputes within his party is enough to kill legislation. Some Trump supporters are insistent Johnson needs to go.
He has not done the job that we elected him to do, and I told him that.
So clearly, if you're Johnson, you want the unifying force that is Trump in the Republican Party supporting you. On the other hand, Trump's got his own set of priorities that sometimes clash with Johnson's. Like, the speaker wants to send aid to Ukraine, Trump isn't nearly as concerned with that. Johnson had pressed for concessions from Democrats on the border. Once he got some of them, Trump effectively killed an immigration deal because he didn't want to give President Biden a political win. But perhaps nothing has pitted these two against each other as clearly as the issue of government surveillance. Defense hawks like Johnson say that American intelligence services need to intercept communications from around the world, but Trump knows firsthand what it's like to have your own staffers names dredged up by a foreign surveillance operation. This set up a pretty epic showdown yesterday on Capitol Hill with lots at stake. Let's go to ABC's Jay O'Brien, who covers the Hill for us. Jay, my eyes kind of glaze over whenever I hear acronyms like FISA. Can you please explain in English what was happening here?
You are hitting the nail on the head of the challenge that we have encountered on Capitol Hill for the last few weeks, Brad, because this has been percolating in the background for quite some time. FISA, the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, is set to expire, and there's been all of this drama around whether or not it should be renewed. The intelligence community says it has to be renewed now and fast because they need it to keep Americans safe, to conduct their counterterrorism operations and things of that nature. So this is a very fraught issue. One of the things you should know just before we go any further is FISA, the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, is a federal law that establishes the procedures in which the intelligence community can surveil foreign nationals. It doesn't target Americans, but Americans' data is sometimes swept up if they're in contact with those foreign nationals who are being surveilled and things of that nature. And it's
America. Like Russian spies trying to get in touch with an American businessman, and now you know who the American businessman is if you're surveilling him.
Right. If you find yourself on the phone with a Russian spy, then your data gets swept up if there is a foreign intelligence surveillance of this Russian spy.
I see.
So it's the American side of things that makes this so fraught. Hardline conservatives in the House and the ACLU, by the way, strange bedfellows here, but both groups have said they want an additional step, another warrant that the intelligence community would have to go out and get if you collect Americans' data as part of the surveillance of a foreign national.
FISA was abused by the FBI, egregiously abused. So there have to be major changes. I think the members need to be able to weigh in on all those changes.
To access that data, they say, you should go get another warrant. What the intelligence community says is if you added that step in the process, it would create this massive backlog that would effectively shut down this program because it would just be all the time gummed up with getting warrants and talking to FISA judges and things of that nature.
Crucial to our ability to use this information to actually protect Americans is our ability to review it promptly and efficiently.
That's the problem that Congress is facing. And with all of that, in walks Donald Trump. Donald Trump posts on social media, quote, kill FISA. And he says he's got some serious disagreements with FISA. He says it was used to spy on people that were tied to his campaign because they were communicating with foreign nationals and things of that nature.
Fact is, they spied on my campaign and they got caught.
So Donald Trump says, get rid of FISA. Do not renew it. And then there is this procedural vote on the House floor. And the tension is high because it's like, who's going to go with Donald Trump? Who's going to go with Speaker Mike Johnson, who has said that this is a necessary national security thing that the intelligence community needs? And then when they have this procedural vote, not even the real vote, just the procedural vote to set up the vote, 19 Republicans go against leadership. They go against Mike Johnson and they side with Donald Trump.
On this vote, the yeas are 193, the nays are 228. The resolution is not adopted.
And then there is no vote on this FISA reauthorization. So now Republicans are scrambling to figure out how they're going to get this legislation on the floor because they have this pretty decent sized group of Republicans who are saying, we are in lockstep with the former president. We do not want FISA renewed, at least in this way.
What are the options? I mean, could it just go away? Is that a possibility here that we no longer, because this goes back to 9/11.
I mean, it probably wouldn't go away. The Senate could pass some legislation and then force the House to take it up. That's called getting jammed on Capitol Hill. Mike Johnson has said to his members that he's really worried about that. He could also just do a different procedural kind of move and open the vote up to the entire floor, which would then allow Democrats to vote for this. And then with those Democratic votes, in theory, this reauthorization of FISA could pass.
Well, that's what's so interesting, Jay, is because I used to think of measures like this as mainly Republican issue. You had hawkish Democrats, certainly, saying the intelligence communities need this. But mainly there were Republicans saying we need intel on our adversaries. Civil liberties risks are worth the reward. Is Trump, I guess, sort of the driving force behind that change?
Yeah. If you would have told Republicans in the Bush administration that Republicans in the House of Representatives would be blocking reauthorization of FISA, I think a lot of them would have looked at you really skeptically.
The lives of countless Americans depend on our ability to monitor these communications.
Donald Trump has really flipped the entire dynamic of this on its head. And it's been going on for quite some time, but this is probably the most clear example of it, at least when it comes to the House of Representatives. Think about it this way. Donald Trump has said to his supporters in Congress that he's got serious gripes with the FBI, and they've gone after the FBI. He said that he's got serious gripes with the intelligence community and its use of surveillance, and they've gone after FISA. That's what we're seeing happen now.
Can't do it. Won't do it. Donald Trump doesn't want it.
If he says jump, sometimes in Congress, these lawmakers say how high, and it has serious implications. Another thing to pay attention to here are the coalitions that this is creating. Can you think of any legislation where Mike Johnson and the White House are on one side and former President Donald Trump and the ACLU are on another side? That does not happen. This is unheard of.
Yeah, and all this, I suppose, leads to even more speculation that Speaker Johnson's job could be on the line. We've seen this from Marjorie Taylor Greene, basically dangling the idea of voting to vacate the guy. Now, Johnson and Trump are supposed to give like a joint press conference on Friday down in Mar-a-Lago, even though you've got Trump posting in all caps, we should kill FISA, kill this thing that Johnson is so behind. All right, Jay O'Brien in Washington. Thank you.
Thank you, Brett.
At the beginning of the year, Boeing was finally feeling like itself again. After years of depressed sales and concerns about pandemic-era travel plans, the American plane maker's stock had finally reached cruising altitude, so to speak. Well, then on January 5th, just a few days into the year, a door plug flew out of an Alaska Airlines flight.
We are emergency. We are depressurized. We do need to return back.
Authorities later revealed it was missing key bolts when it was installed. And over the next few months, Boeing's stock plummeted almost 30%. Well, yesterday it sank even further as reports emerged about a new whistleblower, a Boeing employee, saying the company has been doing shoddy work on some of their Dreamliner aircraft for years. ABC's transportation correspondent Gio Benitez has been tracking all this. Gio, who is this person?
Hey, Brad. So this is Sam Salapour. He's an engineer with Boeing, and he claims that parts of the plane's fuselage are being fastened together improperly on the assembly line, which in theory, he says, could weaken the aircraft over time. So we're talking about decades of time. And he spoke at a press conference yesterday.
I'm doing this not because
I want Boeing to fail, but because I want it to succeed and prevent the crashes from happening.
And his lawyer said that he had been raising these issues with Boeing management for years, but that they just weren't listening.
He is alleging that Boeing knowingly took a series of manufacturing shortcuts in the construction of the 787s.
Now, the FAA says it is investigating these claims from a Boeing whistleblower, but Boeing is actually responding very, very strongly. And they told us this, quote, "These claims about the structural integrity of the 787 are inaccurate. The issues raised have been subject to rigorous engineering examination under FAA oversight. This analysis has validated that these issues do not present any safety concerns and that the aircraft will maintain its service life over several decades." So obviously, Boeing is very strongly disagreeing with this whistleblower, and they sent us a very long statement, probably one of the longest I've ever seen.
And just so I'm clear, Gio, so this is different from the MAX planes, right? Like when we talk about the door plug, that was a 737 MAX. These are Dreamliners he's complaining about.
Yeah, these are totally different planes. These are the 787 Dreamliners. What you're talking about, the MAX 9, obviously scrutiny was intensified over Boeing because of that door plug flying off that plane in January. It was a very, very serious issue. And then you think back to 2018 and 2019, you had those MAX crashes.
After they took off, gear up, flaps come up, the damage sensor puts bad input into the MCAS system, and it begins to push the nose forward.
Those were the 737 MAX planes. Now we're talking about the 787 Dreamliners. There has not been any accident with the 787 Dreamliner. This is just a concern. In fact, these planes have been in service for about 13 years now. And back in 2021 and 2022, Boeing actually addressed this exact issue because of employee concerns. They slowed production down, and they actually temporarily stopped delivering the 787s. At the time, the FAA signed off on how Boeing addressed this issue.
They claim that they've done extensive testing and analysis, but haven't shown it internally to Sam or the other engineers.
Now, it's important to note that this whistleblower has not provided any documented evidence. So right now, the onus is really on the FAA to tell us, is this a new problem or is this the same problem that Boeing already dealt with?
Is this a problem at all? Right. But if he's, it's interesting that he's kind of presenting this hypothetical, right? He's almost saying, yes, we haven't seen any accidents yet, but they could become issues after decades of flying. It's only been 13 years. How would you even test that? How would you even predict what's going to happen decades from now, though, Gio?
Well, there are special stress tests, and Boeing has conducted a lot of them, actually, and they used an older 787, and they actually put it through 165,000 simulated cycles of takeoffs, pressurizations, depressurizations, and landings, and they didn't find any issues of fatigue there, and this jet is actually designed for a lifespan of 44,000 cycles, so we're talking about almost four times the amount of cycles that it would go through anyway. Now, that is what Boeing is saying. Of course, the simulation is very different than what's happening in real life, but Boeing believes that this is very accurate.
To me, human life is precious, and it's worth the trouble that may come my way as a result of coming forward.
So the whistleblower says he's going to testify on Capitol Hill next week, and he says that's when he's going to provide the evidence.
Yeah, everyone will be paying attention to that, including, like I said, these shareholders. Like, this is already having a real effect on Boeing, regardless of the fact that we haven't seen this evidence yet. All right, Gio Benitez, our transportation correspondent. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Brad. Appreciate it.
Okay, one more quick break. When we come back, cat ownership is forever, no matter how swanky your house is. One last thing is next.
We've got the exclusive view behind the table. Every day, right after the show, while the topics are still hot, the ladies go deeper into the moments that make the view, the view. The Views Behind the Table podcast. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
And one last thing. If you've ever been to the Tower of London, you might know that by law, there have to be six ravens on hand. The legend is, if they vanish, so will the monarchy. Some palaces have peacocks casually wandering the grounds. Well, in Mexico, they've got cats. As long as anyone there can remember, feral cats have been wandering the grounds of the presidential palace in Mexico City. At least 50 years ago, some groundskeepers began trying to keep them away, but they kept sneaking in. Well, how times have changed. Earlier this month, President Andrés Manuel López Obrador, AMLO, declared the cats an official feature of the palace grounds. He bestowed upon them the title of living fixed assets, meaning not only can they not be removed, they must be fed and cared for the rest of their lives. They're now under the purview of the palace's cultural heritage director, who took reporters on a tour to see these cats in action.
Yo creo que los gatos...
She's saying she already sees these stately felines as a symbol of the palace. There are 19 of them altogether. They have names like Coco, Yeme, and Oyin. Some, like Bowie, are named after famous visitors. Others, like Zeus, have become celebrities in the Mexican political world after wandering into press conferences. Staff members are known to bring leftovers to share with them. Some have even been spotted giving cats a lick of their ice cream cone. Now, they will all have a food budget under palace rules. And I think the reason I love this so much is this is what politics is supposed to be about, right? I don't mean politicians showing you how much they love pets, not that gimmick. I'm talking about the various things that make a place what it is. Like, if you're a president, you might think, this is my palace, but all it takes is a few feral cats to remind you they were here before you, they will be here long after you leave, you're just passing through for meow, and you got an obligation to take care of the place while you're here. Just like voters, they don't think you gotta be the cat's pajamas, just competent. And whether they show you any affection, that's completely up to them. By the way, animal noises in Spanish, not always the same as what we'd say in English. Like, a duck says quack quack and a rooster says cucurricu. A cat still says meow meow, although it's M-I-A-U. Anyway, that's your random lesson for the day. Hey, by the way, we are still asking for your votes for the Webby Awards. Right now, we are in second place in our category. We need your votes. We want your votes. We thank you for your votes if you've done it already. Just head to our episode description if you want to help out. I'm Brad Milkey. See you tomorrow.
Hey, I'm Andy Mitchell, a New York Times bestselling author.
And I'm Sabrina Kohlberg, a morning television producer. We're moms of toddlers and best friends of 20 years.
And we both love to talk about being parents, yes, but also pop culture.
So we're combining our two interests by talking to celebrities, writers, and fellow scholars of TV and movies.
Cinema, really.
About what we all can learn from the fictional moms we love to watch.
From ABC Audio and Good Morning America, Pop Culture Moms is out now wherever you listen to podcasts.